support comes from Tub Cove. With over 49 years of remodeling bathrooms, Tub Cove can help simplify the process, offering tub and shower replacements and full bathroom remodels. Local and family-owned, with a showroom in Redmond. Designs and information at tubcove.com.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman, and we're continuing our series of conversations about the issues raised in the new KUOW and Seattle Times podcast, Lost Patients. Lost Patients looks at why there are so many severely mentally ill people living on the street in Washington state and why they're not receiving the care that they need. In the latest episode, we hear the story of a man named Adam Arand and his family. Adam has diagnoses of schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and bipolar disorder, among other mental health conditions. He also used drugs, including meth and opiates. He spent years ricocheting between emergency rooms, psychiatric hospitals, jails, a stint in prison, and the streets in and around Seattle. For a period of time, Adam was involuntarily committed at Western State Hospital, the largest psychiatric hospital in Washington. But Western State decided it could no longer go to court to justify keeping him at the facility. And after a search for a suitable placement, the hospital released him outside of a homeless shelter, the Bread of Life Mission, in Seattle's Pioneer Square neighborhood. Adam's mother, Heidi, argued with hospital staff to try to keep him locked up. She pointed out that he was talking to himself again before release. At one point, she picked him up in Seattle and drove him around, trying to delay his return to the street.
I don't know what I could have done. I called the two entities that are supposed to help you. And the crisis line can't do anything. I don't know what the answer is, but I know that wasn't the answer.
The hosts of Lost Patients say Adam's experience is an example of the churn, how patients with severe mental illness and sometimes overlapping substance abuse disorders bounce between shelters, ERs, the criminal justice system, and a limited number of psychiatric beds in the state. One of those providers is the Crisis Solutions Center, which is run by Seattle's Downtown Emergency Service Center. And we should be clear that we don't know whether Adam himself ever interacted with DESC. It does not appear in his records, so we're going to be talking generally about DESC and the service it provides. To learn more about this part of our mental health care system and the part DESC plays to help stabilize and support people like Adam, we reached out to Daniel Malone, Executive Director of DESC. Daniel, thank you very much for being here on Soundside today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So first off, what is DESC?
We're a nonprofit organization focused on trying to help people who have complicated behavioral health conditions like serious mental illness, co-occurring substance use disorder, and who have experienced long periods of homelessness. And so we do that through a variety of behavioral health services, outpatient mental health services, outpatient substance use disorder treatment services, some emergency kinds of services like the Crisis Solutions Center, mobile crisis behavioral health services across King County, and a lot of emergency shelter, emergency housing, and most significantly in my mind, long-term housing, permanent supportive housing is what it's called. At any moment in time, we're serving about 3,000 different people. About 2,000 of those individuals are housed, and 1,000 of them are currently experiencing homelessness. The folks who are housed of that number, about 2,000, are people who almost entirely were experiencing homelessness when we began our relationship with them. We were serving them through our behavioral health services or our emergency shelter services. And over time, we're able to help them into housing either that we operate or that are operated by some other kind of entity.
So you have this variety of services that DESC provides, and part of that is crisis intervention. Tell me, what does that look like? And what are the outcomes for patients and clients who are part of this crisis intervention program?
So the crisis services that we provide have two principal components. One is what's known as mobile crisis, where we have mental health professionals who go out in pairs 24/7 across King County and attempt to assist people who are having an immediate behavioral health crisis, like a psychiatric crisis, and, you know, essentially are having one of the worst moments of their lives. The other side of the crisis work is a facility, the Crisis Solutions Center, which is a voluntary behavioral health facility where people can go for a very limited period of time, for a couple of days to a couple of weeks, and receive wraparound services, psychiatric care, medication support, food, rest, planning for the future. In either one of those kinds of interventions, whether it's something that lasts for just a few hours or something that lasts for up to a couple of weeks, we're able to support people through that immediate event that is making things so terrible for them at that moment. We struggle, however, with what to do after that immediate crisis moment has been surpassed, where, you know, we need to try to set somebody up with a more stable place to be. And for those folks who don't have a home to return to, which is the vast majority of people who we're serving in our behavioral health crisis services, we struggle to find them that stable place to go. And so it is quite predictable that we're going to see them again. The immediate crisis has been resolved, but if they don't have a stable place to live because there aren't enough openings in stable places for people to be, either short-term or long-term, then they're very likely to go back into that churn and re-experience some kind of crisis event.
Yeah, and then any gains that treatment provided in these crisis centers and the crisis interventions are invariably lost because people are back on the street or in really unstable situations, and the whole process can start over again. Lost Patients, the podcast that we've been talking about, uses this term called the churn to describe how many people with severe mental illness and sometimes co-occurring substance abuse disorder can bounce between service providers and the criminal justice system, hospitals, ERs, things like that, and often the street. How do you observe the churn from the perspective of DESC? Do you have a lot of clients who come in having bounced between a number of different providers, the street, jail, things like that?
Yes, that is a term that feels very familiar to me in terms of it reflecting the instability that so many people experience when they don't have an ongoing stable place to live. When you're in the psychiatric system, oftentimes what happens is you go into the hospital or you go into a short-term behavioral health crisis facility, and you receive care for however long you're there, and that care costs a lot of money. You're there 24/7. There are staff, many of whom are skilled professionals working to serve you and try to make progress on the symptoms that you're having with the psychiatric condition you have. And, you know, all that adds up, and it's an expensive kind of intervention. Well, when you're discharged from there, if you don't have a place to be discharged to, a home, then you end up getting discharged to the streets. And we should not expect that anybody who is being discharged from inpatient or short-term crisis psychiatric services into the streets is going to have the effect of that psychiatric intervention actually last, because it's totally undone by the chaos of living on the streets, the stress, of not having a place to live, of being out in the elements, of encountering different forms of violence that are on the streets, the mental anguish that people go through when they're on the streets, is totally debilitating and interferes, of course, then with what we should be able to expect otherwise could have occurred when somebody got some of those psychiatric services.
And that's, in fact, exactly what happened with Adam Arendt in this episode of Lost Patients. Will describes how Western State Hospital deemed it was no longer able to go to court to say that Adam should be involuntarily committed. And so they began the discharge process. You know, there's a lot of interesting things about this discharge process. One is that they are not able to set him up with Social Security payments, because he's technically still part of the state system and not eligible for those payments. And so that's a service that has to be set up when somebody is technically homeless. The other thing is that they simply can't find an appropriate place for Adam to be discharged to. And so he is dropped off in front of the Bread of Life mission in Pioneer Square in Seattle. And nobody knows for sure whether he even ever went into the Bread of Life mission. Adam eventually meets a tragic end and overdoses on fentanyl. Do you see people being discharged to the street frequently as at DESC or in general, because they are unable to find appropriate beds coming out of an involuntary or crisis commitment situation? I mean, is this a common occurrence?
Yes, it's quite common. There is a huge imbalance between the number of people with these kinds of needs and the amount of housing that's available to them in the community. We've done some analyses of this, and some other groups have done that as well. I was part of a group called the Third Door Coalition that determined a gap of about 6,500 permanent supportive housing units in King County. That's the number of people experiencing chronic homelessness in King County who need that more robust type of subsidized housing with wraparound services.
So what is the solution here? I mean, the thing that Will and Esme Jimenez and Sydney Brownstone, the co-hosts of Lost Patients, come back to is that at each step of Adam's experience with the system, the individual service provider did exactly to the letter of the law what they needed to do. They got him stabilized, or they provided a short-term solution, and then it was time to release or to move on. And so there wasn't ever a time at which the system technically failed, but their argument is that the system is built from the ground up incorrectly to meet the needs of these patients, of these people with severe mental illness and co-occurring substance abuse disorder. Do you agree with that? And if you were to build the system anew, what would it look like?
Yes, I agree with that. The system is designed to provide psychiatric services. It is not designed to meet the housing needs of the individuals who are being served by that system. And that's exactly what needs to happen, is that we should not expect that the psychiatric services being delivered, which are excellent services in many, many cases, are going to have the long-term intended effect. There isn't some kind of magic cure for a lot of these conditions that people have. Even medication treatment, when people agree to attempt that kind of therapy, has its limits. There isn't some stripping away of all of the symptoms that somebody was having when they start taking some of these psychotropic medications. Sometimes there's great benefit that happens from it, but it isn't a cure. And even if there is tremendous progress on symptoms due to taking medications, it doesn't solve the other issues of people. Every human on the planet needs a safe, stable, place to live, where they can get rest when they need rest, where they can feel safe and private when they need to feel like that. And so until we address that need that everybody has, we're going to continue to have more of this churn, as you're describing it. So we can't do crisis only. We've got to have a good crisis response system, but we also have to have a system of care for people that includes housing and forms of stability like that, so that there is less crisis event occurrence coming down the road.
Yeah, the permanence, the stability is the place from which other improvements, other good things can occur. I'm hearing you say that. I also want to emphasize that during this last patient's episode that I'm discussing, the Western State Hospital provided their social work lead, who talks Will through the process of releasing somebody who is no longer going to be involuntarily committed, and just how difficult it is for them to find across the state appropriate placements for people, because everybody has individual needs. Each place that has available beds, if there are any beds, has a different set of criteria, a different set of intake. People have to do interviews before they enter a lot of these places. And for, a number of people every month, Western State is unable to find that. And that speaks to the lack of these long-term permanent supportive housing options that you're talking about here. Another issue that comes up here, Daniel, is the fact that substance abuse and severe mental illness so often in these cases is overlapping and difficult to untangle. Any comment on that issue and whether we are properly set up to deal with these co-occurring disorders when people are trying to find placements in the system?
Well, yes, you're right that these are very often overlapping issues. We use this term in recent years, behavioral health, which encompasses both the kind of mental health or psychiatric side of things, as well as substance use disorder side of things. In combination, those things are what we're talking about when we use the term behavioral health. A lot of people with serious psychiatric conditions also have co-occurring substance use disorder. We have found that permanent supportive housing that accepts people without conditions and provides them with very robust wraparound voluntary services is also effective at serving people with serious substance use disorder. Now, it isn't to say that any of this stuff is a cure. Of course, we all know from either our own individual experience or among people we know in our families or other circles that it's really hard for people to address substance use disorder. And a lot of people struggle with it for years and years and go through different forms of treatment repeatedly. We've documented at DESC experiences of our clients who, before they've moved into permanent supportive housing, had gone through 16 on average treatment attempts before moving into housing. And so it isn't that people don't want help for those kinds of issues, it's that the kinds of treatment that typically exist don't always result in the outcome that we all want, because these are chronic, difficult problems to serve. That said, permanent supportive housing has a good track record of helping reduce the effect of those kinds of substance use disorder on people. People tend to use less and have fewer negative experiences from their use once they have the stability of housing. So that's really the key to a lot of these things is that we make sure that an adequate supply of housing with services that people need is brought into the equation in addition to the behavioral health care that people are receiving both in inpatient settings and also outpatient in the community.
Daniel Malone with DESC, thank you very much for being here. And I appreciate you sharing your perspective. Again, we're trying to sort of understand the greater issues being brought up by Lost Patients, the Seattle Times and KUOW podcast. And I'm appreciative of you for helping to illuminate folks and keep the conversation going. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. And thanks so much for having me. And if I could just say one more quick thing is
Please.
That I want to express a great appreciation for this podcast and this episode following up on it. I just think it's so important that these efforts are kind of giving better visibility and voice to people who are real human beings in our community and are the people who need us all to be doing better, because they can be wonderful members of our communities and we need to give them a much better chance.
Daniel Malone with DESC, the Downtown Emergency Service Center. Thanks again.
Thank you. Goodbye.
You're listening to Soundside. We've been talking about the subject of the newest episode of Lost Patients. Lost Patients is a podcast by KUOW and the Seattle Times that examines the difficulties of treating serious mental illness in our state. You can hear every episode of Lost Patients on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening to Soundside. By the way, this show is only possible because listeners support us. If you are able to give right now, check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.